Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hey, the fuck you, they're here. All right. Laverne, this is Laverne DeFazio, she's mine. And this is Shirley Feeney, she's yours, as you can see.
Nice to meet you, Richie.
My pleasure.
Hey, they're getting along pretty well, huh? Plant it here, girls, plant it here.
I'm trying to sit down.
Staring? How'd you like your eyes closed for good, huh?
You're too much, Laverne.
So, Cheryl, what do you think of this kid? You've been with worse.
Oh, he's nice. And a tie, too.
And a hanky. Is that for showing or for blowing?
Well, it's been quite an evening. What do you say we go to Richie's house?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Schlemiel, Schlemazel, Hasenbemp Incorporated.
It's Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. So this winter marks the 40th anniversary of the hit 1970s TV sitcom Laverne and Shirley, which premiered in 1976. And by its third season, it became the most watched American television program, even surpassing the ratings of the program it spun off of, and that was Happy Days. And it lasted for 8 seasons. And it starred Cindy Williams, half of the comedic duo of Laverne and Shirley, along with Penny Marshall. Now, Cindy's first big film was American Graffiti with Ron Howard, Richard Dreyfuss, and Harrison Ford. She also has producer roles to her credit on movies like Steve Martin's Father of the Bride. She has performed on Broadway and on stage in the national tours of Grease, Moon Over Buffalo, and Nonsense. And to celebrate 4 decades of this classic sitcom, Cindy Williams joins us tonight. Hello there, Cindy.
Hey, Dave, even I'm impressed.
That's awesome. Well, you've had such a long, great career, man. I mean, you've had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've had fun, and I have been so blessed.
You absolutely have. You absolutely have. And, you know, when I was growing up, Tuesday nights were all about – I was born in 67, so – Tuesday nights were all about Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley, and I'm feeling my age a little bit because I can't believe it's been 40 years since this show went on the air.
Hey, honey, you and me both. 40 years. In fact, you know, I'm up rehearsing a play in L.A. I live in the desert, and I'm staying at Penny's house, and the other night she said, "It's been 40 years." And I said, "Since what?" And she said, "Since we premiered." And I said, "Oh, that was all those tweets I just got, you know, in my..."
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty fantastic, Dave. It really is. And I just consider myself, you know, among the lucky ones, real lucky and really blessed by God.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I read your autobiography, Shirley I Just, A Story Life, that came out last year. And I got to tell you, very inspirational book. I felt, and you know, you talked about growing up and all your childhood experiences, and some were a little tough, you know, growing up. You grew up with an alcoholic parent, but you know, I can't imagine it's ever that easy. But writing about it, did you feel it healing to talk about it and kind of get it off your chest and really realize the amazing life you have and continue to have?
You know, if you're the first person who's asked me that, and it's a great question. And I thought about it afterwards, and not while I was writing it. It was hell to write it because, you know, I was talking to my sister, and she said, "Don't say that, don't say that." I said, "Believe me, you know, I'm going to tell the truth, and everybody comes out looking like, smelling like a rose." And it was tough writing it, but a lot of fun at the same time, just like my childhood was. Just like my life has been, tough and fun. And I, you know, afterwards, looking back on it, I thought, wow, that was some life, or has been up to this point, some life. But I never, you know, like all of us, we go along in our lives and we live our lives. But then when you get to my age and you start looking back and really giving it perspective, you think, wow. And there's certain things you go, I need to correct that. And that was fabulous. And thank you, Lord. But, you know, I mean, there are things you need to pick up and make straight. And it's just really, it was very fulfilling. But I was terrified when I was writing it because it was a deadline, as you know, about deadlines.
Right.
And I thought, I'll never finish this. And I did. I made it right under the hour, you know, right down to the line. And I thought, this would make a fabulous two-act play about trying to just the last 28 hours of trying to finish the book and getting it in, you know, and meeting the deadline.
Yeah.
And that was fun, too. But I have a friend who says, you know, Cindy, if you didn't have high drama in your life, you wouldn't know how to live. And that's the truth.
That is true, because everybody's got their stuff. I mean, everybody wants to think they don't, but everybody's got their stuff.
Everybody, and everybody's life is special. And I learned that from writing the book. Everyone's life is special and unique and fantastic.
Now, you decided early on in your life that you wanted to become an actress. I mean, this was high school years maybe, or was it even before that?
Well, it was high school, but I also wanted, really in high school, I wanted to be an ER nurse. And I think I was ahead of the curve there because I saw the drama in it. But I was in drama in high school, and I figured everybody could do, you know, theater, that everybody could do comedy and drama. But I wanted to be a nurse, but I have ADD and dyslexia, and because of that, I didn't know it at the time.
Right.
But because of that, I wasn't academically inclined, shall we say, and so I kept getting, like, C's in biology, and this is after repeating it in summer school. And then I thought, who the heck wants a nurse that got a C twice in biology,
yeah,
you know, and had to take it again and average it out? So, you know, I started looking around for something else to do, and I had friends in the drama class that I was in high school, and they were going to Los Angeles City College and taking the theater arts course there, which was very tough. I didn't know it at the time, but I thought, well, heck, I could do that, and maybe I could get my BA and teach drama. And so then I gave up my nursing career, Dave, and I headed toward a teaching career, which also did not pan out because I was not academically inclined. And, you know, looking back on it now, I think, well, if the good Lord had, you know, really had a purpose for me, then he just kept blocking me being an academic and just headed me toward comedy, which came naturally to me. And so therefore I had the blessing of being able to make people laugh.
Well, and you had the determination back then, because I know, you know, you didn't have a lot of money. Folks didn't have a lot of money, and you put yourself through college. I mean, that, and you were working at the same time of going to college. That was a lot
Dave,
of determination.
I put myself through junior college. That's how poor I was. I couldn't afford, you know, the one book I needed for junior college, which was called Definite Economic and Telling Movement. And it was for the theater arts class I was in. And I needed, how much was it? Like $12 to buy this book. And my mother said, I don't have that money. And why do you need books? Don't they give you books? And I said, no, evidently they don't in junior college. And so yeah. I went to the student union or to wherever they were giving student loans. And I applied. And they said, oh, you know, we have this new thing called affirmative action, and I did not get a loan because I wasn't ethnic enough and I wasn't poor enough. And I kept saying, I'm Sicilian and Welsh and we're really poor.
Yeah.
And they said, sorry.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So every day at noon, I had to, you know, rearrange my classes. So I, you know, I got on a bus and I got a job in downtown L.A., as a PBX operator, beginning with that. And I just went on from there. And it was really good. it was great, you know, and that work ethic was wonderful that pushed me into.
That's very cool. I mean, you worked hard because you were paying and you were going to school at the same time. Now, you know, tell me about the Actor Studio, because I know you were part of that, too. That kind of honed your skills as well.
Well, actually, what happened there was, and I write about that in my book, I had a friend who was this marvelous actor, Vern Joyce, and in college, he was just brilliant, brilliant. And he was an actor by night and a pharmacist by day. Anyway, that's how brilliant he was. Wow. He had gone to New York, and he had auditioned for the Actors Studio, which started out with like 2,000 people, something like that. I could be wrong, but it was like this, you know, high number of people, actors who started out auditioning. And they had honed it down to I don't know how many, but he'd moved in that whole process, he had moved back to the West Coast, and he asked me if I would do his final scene with him and at the Actor Studio, and I thought, oh, sure, I'd always wanted to act with him because he's just brilliant, still is to this day. And so the pressure was off of me going in. I was just, you know, facilitating his scene, his three-minute scene in front of Lee Strasberg and the others who were on the panel watching. So we went on and we did a scene from Petulia, and he told me, you know, we're going to go on stage. Whatever's on stage you have to use as the props and furniture, and we have 3 minutes. We begin. Whenever they say thank you, we bow and say thank you and walk off. I said, easy. So we did it. I had no nerves because it was his audition,
right,
not mine. Well, in the end, there were 9 people that were taken into the Actor Studio that year, and among them was Vern and myself. And Robert De Niro was another one, and Sally Field, who I'd gone to high school with, was another one. And I tell you, I was over the moon and didn't need a rocket. It was so fantastic. So I was made a member of the Actor Studio, and I was fortunate enough to go and sit in on sessions where Lee Strasberg himself was the moderator, and it was amazing.
That's pretty cool.
So that's my Actor Studio story.
Love it. Love it. All right. Well, we're talking to Cindy Williams about American movie classic American Graffiti and the 40th anniversary of Laverne and Shirley. And there's more with Cindy next on 720 WGN.
Just what makes that little old ant think he can move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant, 'cause he's got what, Laverne?
High hopes.
Louder.
High hopes.
That's right. He's got high hopes. He's got high apple pie in the sky. Hope so anytime you're feeling
Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. And we're talking to Cindy Williams about her first movie role in the screen classic American Graffiti and the 40th anniversary of classic 70s sitcom Laverne and Shirley. You were getting guest roles on various television shows, and not long after that, American Graffiti came along. And I know when you auditioned for a different role. How did that all come about?
I wanted to play Debbie, the bad girl that Candy Clark played, but it had already been cast with Candy. So, and they couldn't, you know, cast this ingenue. So I said, oh, come on. You know, all she does is weep and whine all night. And they said, we can't find anyone. You have to audition for it. And so I said, okay, because they were friends. You know, Fred Roos was my friend, and he started me out in show business. So I said, okay. And I went over and I auditioned with Ron Howard. Ronnie. He was Ronnie then.
Right.
Ronnie Howard. And, he was just lovely, and I had just gotten, you know, I had literally just gotten off the plane from Spain, where I had shot Travels with My Aunt, and I was jet lagging. So I told Ronnie, I said, I'm going to have to hold the script, and he said, that's okay. And he, pardon me, I've got the hiccups.
Oh, that's
he was so sweet, Ron Howard, and he said, "That's okay, you can hold the script." And so I did, and we did our screen test and left, and then they offered me the role. And the rest is show business history.
Yeah, I mean, not bad for a first big film, you know, produced by Francis Ford Coppola, who just came off The Godfather, writer-director George Lucas. I know, you know, I've read it wasn't a really easy movie to make because it first started as a project for United Artists, then it made its way to Universal. The film ended up, you know, with a small budget. It was like a little over $1 million, and it grossed.
No, it wasn't. It was $775,000, and most of that went to the rights, to pay off the rights for the music.
Oh, God.
In the movie.
Can you imagine that?
So, Harrison Ford, and I know Harry doesn't mind me saying this, he was paid $400 a week. And Richard and Ronnie and I were paid the most. We were paid $1,000 a week for 4 weeks. That was it.
Wow. But it grossed like $55 million eventually. I mean, this thing was nominated for an Oscar, won Best Picture at the Golden Globes. I mean, this is one of those movies that you put on the shelf and say, this is an iconic piece of Americana.
Yes, it is. And it's on the AFI 100 top best movies of all time list, and we had no idea. We thought we were doing a hot rod movie, and then 2 weeks into it, which was half of the production, we were George invited us into the editing bay to watch a 20-minute assemblage of the film with music, and when that was over, we picked our jaws up off the ground, and we all knew we were in something majestic.
Was that the role that said to you in everything you did so far, like, wow, this is the role that really said, I'm on my way? I mean, this is it. This was the trajectory for me.
You know, I wouldn't say it was the role, but I'd say it was the film. And because,
that's fair. Okay.
You know, that wasn't my thing, playing. Although up till then, I'd never gotten to play comedy, which I wanted to play so badly. And I was always the lead's best friend. I was always the ingenue's best friend. And then in American Graffiti, I was the actual ingenue. But where everybody else got to have fun and hijinks, I just wept all night, you know. And but that was the job. And I was certainly in the movie that changed everything around for me.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely it did. And then, you know, I was reading right before Laverne and Shirley, you and Penny were writing a movie together. Is that right? So did you meet writing this movie, or was it before then that you got to know each other?
No, we had met before then on a double date, oddly enough.
Really?
And, yeah, that's in the book about when we went to the Coconut Grove, and that's where we met, and that's where little Richard blessed us. And and we always, you know, gave him the thumbs up for the success of Laverne and Shirley, for that blessing. And because we went to the Coconut Grove to see Liza Minnelli, or we were taken there by our dates to see Liza Minnelli. And opening for her was Little Richard. And there's a whole thing in the book about that. But, we were writing. And then after that, we were writing partners on this film for Francis Coppola, who was producing this bicentennial spoof. And there were teams of writers
My Country, Tis of Thee, right?
My Country, Tis of Thee,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
It never got made.
Yeah.
It was very funny. Carr Gottlieb was the producer on that, and Steve Martin, Martin Mull, Harry Shearer, just fabulous writers were writing on it, and they had asked me and Penny to team up, don't ask, and write. And that was the first time we really worked together. And, you know, we had the same sensibility, this kind of cartoon minds, you know, we saw things in cartoon terms, and we wrote very funny sketches for that movie.
Well, all right, stick around. There's more with actress Cindy Williams next on 720 WGN.
I treat my body as a temple, Laverne. You have chosen to treat yours as an amusement park.
Dave Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Cindy Williams about her first movie role in the screen classic American Graffiti and the 40th anniversary of classic 70s sitcom Laverne and Shirley. Tuesday night, November 11th, 1975, you debuted as Shirley on this episode of Happy Days. How did that all come along? Was it Gary that engaged Penny, or how did that all go?
Well, that's while we were riding. We got a phone call, and it was Gary, and he asked Penny, he said, I got these two parts on Happy Days, these two girls who date the fleet.
I love your Gary impersonation.
I thought maybe you and Cindy could come over, take a week off, come over, play the parts. And Penny said, yeah, here's Cindy. And she put me on the phone. And he said, you know, that to me. And I said, yeah, sounds like fun if Carl will let us go. And Carl let us go. And we went over and played these two girls. Oh, my goodness. We had no idea. Neither one of us had ever seen Happy Days. She hadn't seen it. And I didn't have a TV and at the time. And so we just played these girls coming on. We were smoking real cigarettes when we came on.
Is
in
that
rehearsal.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Fixing each other's lingerie, pulling up each other's bra straps and doing all this stuff. And the director.
I just remember it was pretty damn sexy for that show to have
yeah, well,
I mean, you played a pretty
well,
cool role.
We had no idea. We were on like a family. We didn't even know what a family show meant. And we flicked our cigarettes across the stage and came on. And then Jerry Paris, who was directing, said, stop. And he said, you can't smoke. This is family hour. You can't smoke. Go off stage and begin again. And we had no idea what the heck he was talking about.
Just 35
million.
Family
hour? What's he talking about?
Family hour and 35 million people watching the show.
And we just had no idea what he was talking about. So we put the cigarettes out, and we were chewing gum. We said, all right, we'll chew gum, and we'll have bobby pins in our hair, and we'll cut the checking each other's bra straps out, and we'll just come on, whatever. And so we did, and we did the show. And we went back to our little writing job. And then about, I don't know, 2-3 weeks later, somebody called and said, they want to do a spinoff. Again, we had no idea what that meant. And it had to be explained to us what a spinoff was. And, you know, and then it went on from there.
Yeah, but that happened so quickly. I mean, it was literally, it aired in
Very
November.
Fast.
And you were on the air in January. And by the way, the week you premiered, it was number one. The show was number one the week it premiered. I mean, it became, you know, a few years later, you were the number one show on television, but it was the most watched show for the premiere. That's crazy. Oop, did I lose you?
You know, Penny and I, it was like, I don't know, taking two, I don't know, waitresses and saying, you're famous. Saying what? I'm telling you, it took us a year to catch up with and get and say, oh, we get it.
Yeah.
We had no idea. We were so naive. And, you know, I mean, someone asked me just today, they asked me about the accent on the show. I said, it was so fast and everything. And then it started and every cast member was from back east, and they all had these, you know, eastern accents.
Right, yeah.
And so I thought, well, I better have one too. And I didn't even have time to process that or think about it. And so I just adopted this sort of, you know, kind of bad, very bad New York accent.
It was thicker in the beginning of the show. Yeah,
it was terrible, terrible. It was awful, and I knew it. But I thought, well, everybody else has it. But we're from Milwaukee.
Yeah, right.
What the heck? You know, and I thought, well, Milwaukee, maybe they have, you know, those accents. Anyway, 13 weeks into it, Gary came down onto the stage, and I write about that in the book,
yeah.
And he said,
yeah.
Cindy, I want to talk to you about the accent. I said, lose it? He said, yes. I said, thank you. And that was the end of that.
And that was
but
the end of
we
that.
Had, Penny and I had no time to process this. None. It's like being taken from, I don't even know, oblivion into like the Kleeglites. I can't even describe it to anybody. It's like, it's just,
yeah,
just daunting.
Yeah.
Daunting.
Yeah. No,
you know? And then about a year later, it caught up with us, or we caught up with it and said, so this is what it's like. And we were famous. And it's just like, oh my God. And people ask me, what's it like to be famous? It's like everything you think it is. It's just like overwhelming, fabulous, thrilling, daunting, you know, a little frightening, and wonderful.
Do you remember the first, like, public appearance you made outside of the studio, what that was like? Because I've talked to Henry Winkler about the days of Happy Days and walking off a plane and seeing these people, and he was wondering who those people were here to see. Was the president landing here? What was the crowds for? I mean, right?
Well, the first time we realized we were really popular, we were asked to do the Macy's Day Thanksgiving
right.
Day Parade.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we were on this float, and we're coming down Fifth Avenue. It's Fifth Avenue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
Macy's
started pushing.
Yeah, Macy's would have been Broadway, and yeah. But anyway, go ahead.
Wherever it was, and we look, and this we're up on the float waving, and this crowd starts, and they break the barriers. They push the barriers down, and they start running toward us. And Penny and I look behind us to see who they were running toward. We thought it was the Rolling Stones or somebody, and it was us.
That's awesome.
And then the police came and stopped the crowd, and that was the first time that I think either one of us realized the popularity of the show.
But the characters were so great. It was such a fun show. You know, the upbeat, always smiling, cute Shirley Feeney, and the tough, sarcastic Laverne DeFazio on this program. And at the time, and I just remember people talking about this because there were real water cooler moments at the time. There was no social media. The social media was talking about what you saw the next day at school, the next day at work. And people compared you to like a modern day Lucy and Ethel. They were talking about Lucille Ball and Vivian Vance, that you were the next incarnation of this great comedy duo. That's pretty cool.
That is. It's just beyond, you know, honoring and thrilling. It's just unbelievable. But, you know, Penny and I, we never thought about that. What we thought of was what made us laugh. And what we thought of in rehearsal was, because some of the script, you know, I mean, some of the shows weren't great. And there were some that were, I'd put them up there with wonderful, wonderful comedy shows. But we would, in rehearsal, if it didn't make us laugh out loud, then we knew it wasn't going to make the audience laugh out loud. So our goal each week between us was, and the whole cast, was to make ourselves laugh out loud, because we knew that would translate to the studio audience, and then again to the television audience, and make everybody laugh out loud. That's what we tried to do. Well,
you challenged the writers. You challenged the writers to make it a better show.
We did. We challenged Well, what we do is, because we were writers ourselves, we would improvise, mm-hmm. you know, during rehearsal, and we would change things around. We got ourselves into trouble because of that. And, you know, and looking back on it, we did not give the writers their due respect. We didn't, because we were so just hell-bent to do our own thing, make sure that it was funny as we could make it. We'd throw things out, and people would get their feelings hurt. And, you know, Penny and I, we realize it now, but we didn't realize it back then that we were hurting people's feelings. And there had to be, you know, but that being said, everybody did pull together, and the writers would come down and see what we made of their themes, you know, what we made right. of their writing. And
ultimately,
a mutual admiration society.
Well, I was going to say, ultimately, you made a better product together, really.
We did, yeah. all of us,
yeah.
writers, producers, everybody yeah. included, because all of us, including the writers, wanted to make that audience laugh out loud.
All right. Well, we're talking to Cindy Williams about American movie classic American Graffiti and the 40th anniversary of Laverne and Shirley. And there's more with Cindy next on 720 WGN.
And there is no reason on earth why Prince Charming cannot walk through our front door. Hello.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN, and we're talking to Cindy Williams about four decades of 70s TV comedy Laverne and Shirley. You were surrounded by great people on in front of the camera, too. Michael McKean, David Lander, Eddie Mecca, Phil Foster, Betty Garrett. I mean, it was just such a fun group.
Oh, my goodness. The entire I hope I said that before. It wasn't just me and Penny. It was the entire cast that was in sync. In fact, one time I said, you know, if this cast was an Olympic team, if they had Olympic teams for comedy, we'd medal. We'd at yeah. least take the bronze. I remember saying that to Penny one night, and it was about the whole cast. I mean, we were just always in sync, all of us, no matter what was going on backstage, no matter if Penny and I were arguing about something or anything, we hit that stage and all of us were in sync.
Well, I bet you it was tough, too. I've seen some of the DVD collections and the blooper reels and stuff. It was probably hard to keep a straight face in some of the stuff because, as you said, you wanted to make it so funny while you're on the air. It must have been hard not to break character.
Well, it was. But you know what, Dave? We didn't have too many bloopers because we had laughed it out during rehearsal. There were a few. And there was one in particular that we never stopped laughing. It's in the show. We don't stop laughing. We can't stop laughing at ourselves.
That's great.
And
love it.
It's in the dating show where we get wet because we run out and there's a fire hydrant has exploded or something and the fire department's there. And we'd just gotten ready for dates, and we run out because the boys say something to us, Lenny and Squiggy, and we run outside, and we get totally soaked, and we come in, and Penny and I just, and you know, we saved everything for the show. In other words, we didn't run it, like, with the water, with the wetness, until the actual show.
Right.
And so that one, we could not bite our cheeks enough to keep ourselves from laughing.
That's
and
awesome.
So you see it. You see it there.
You know, do you have some favorite episodes that you say, gosh, those are my favorite? That's got to be one of them, obviously.
I got a couple. I've got Murder on the Moose Jaw Express, which is a two-parter, and Guinea Pigs, which is where we want to go to this cocktail party at the Hotel Pfister to be professional men. And so we volunteer at Lenny and Squiggy's personal little gold mine, which is a experimental laboratory, you know, and people volunteer to go in and they get $20 each. And we needed the $20 to get into this cocktail party, so we volunteer. And that's one of my one of my favorite shows. And then
I would say for me, it was one of the early ones was the one where you were going to a high society party and Henry Winkler was a guest.
That's a premiere show.
Is that the first show?
Oh,
my God. Honestly, that's a classic. That is just a absolute classic because it really established the characters.
Where we get our our dresses from Squiggy's uncle's wax museum.
Yes, exactly.
He brings us dresses off of the models at the wax museum, and we go to this party, this high society party.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was the first show. And let's see. There's like 13, I'd say there's 13 or 14 shows that are my favorite. And Penny and I have like four of them that cross over that are both our favorite shows.
That's cool.
So, yeah, there's some shows that I would say are right up there. I'd put them up there with, you know, up against any comedy. But we had some real dogs. We had some real shows, some shows that were not so funny. And Penny and I tried and tried and tried. And we just couldn't, we could make certain parts of them funny, but, you know, it just didn't come up to snuff for whatever reason.
Sure. And at some point in, I think it was after season five, the series locale changed from Milwaukee to Hollywood. Did you like that? Was that something that you both were fond of? Did it give you something new to do?
No, we hated it. Yeah. No, yeah. We were very upset. And we argued and argued with Gary, and he would not relent. He said, it's going to be better because you moved to Hollywood. We can get guest stars. And we said, no, we need to leave it in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
In that basement apartment. Yeah. And he just, you know, he was just hell-bent to make it Hollywood. And so, you know, it was Hollywood. Hollywood it was.
And you went on for another few seasons there. But the last season, and it was always odd to me, and you write about this in the book too, it was really just Laverne. You know, I know you were pregnant at the time. And is that why you left the series at that point? Because I think you were on maybe the first episode or second episode of that final season, and then you were gone.
Right. It was just a bunch of hullabaloo.
Yeah.
And the studio had never dealt. I was the first person that they tried to deal with who was pregnant, and they kept booking me to do shows. When it was the week I was due to deliver my baby, and I kept arguing, you know, and saying, no, and they just didn't get it. And then it went back and forth and back and forth, and I got tired. And then it was like, you're fired, I quit. You know, I mean, it was just like that. I quit, you're fired.
Yeah.
And that was it. And I was happy to be home, actually, and to rest. And they went on for a year with Laverne and Company and did the show. And I was happy, you know, that they went on. And I was happy that I got to stay at home and have my beautiful little daughter.
Was that tough for Penny to see you, you know, walk away? I mean, there's reasons for this, obviously. You had a baby, but was that tough between the two of you?
That's a good question. Well, I'm sitting in her den right now.
Right. Things have changed, so, obviously. Yeah, I know.
But it was both tough and okay, yeah. I have to say.
Yeah.
It was tough for both of us in our own different ways, and it was okay in our own different ways.
Yeah, and obviously,
you know, it's just life. It was just life.
Yeah, right. It's just what happened at the time. Well, I got to tell you, my 10-year-old daughter watches a show called Sam and Cat on Nickelodeon.
Oh, and Sam and Cat,
And she's 10, and maybe she was 9 when this was on, and she yelled one day, Dad, you got to come down the stairs. Those girls that we saw on that show on MeTV after Happy Days, they're on the show. You got to come here and see this. And it was funny because there you are, because you guys, you know, you've done reunion shows together, but really acting on screen together, that was like the first time in quite a long time that you did that.
Right, and I had always said when they offered these reunion shows, I said, well, why don't we do a movie of the week? Why doesn't the whole cast just get together and let's do a movie of the week? And no, nobody wanted to do that. So then Sam and Cat came along, and Penny said, well, that'll be fun. So we went to do it, and, you know, they put boxing gloves on us for this fight, and we didn't expect that. And Penny said, well, we're not going to be able to, like, use our hands to slap fight. And that was a thing we always did with
right,
slap fight.
Right.
And
the
they
fast,
said,
yeah.
No, we want the boxing gloves on you. And, oh, man, we just went back and forth with the boxing gloves. And so finally, you know, the producers won, and it was boxing gloves. So Penny said, well, just, you know, I said, I'll bite your ankles. And that was it.
But
she said, I'll sit down.
But isn't it funny
and
the two of you
sat down, and that was it.
But
that's
isn't it,
all we did.
But isn't it funny that
we didn't have our hands? We didn't have our hands. We had them in boxing gloves. And she said, she can't punch me. That's not funny. And she was right. And you know, if they'd let us have our hands, we could have had a wonderful slap fight with each other that wouldn't have hurt anybody, and it would have been very funny. But they insisted on those boxing gloves, and we did it, you know, the way they wanted it done. But it was a lot of fun. Those girls were fabulous, and we had a lot of fun together.
But think about what you just said. Decades later, after you said, you know, you and Penny were on the set and you wanted to make it better and you'd make recommendations, here you are, first time working together on set on a sitcom, and you guys are telling them what should be done better, what'll be funny, because you've done this. You've been there and you've done that, right?
Right.
Yeah.
The producers, you know, we acquiesced to what they wanted. We had learned our lesson.
Right.
And so, okay, boxing gloves it is, yeah. And I'll just bite her ankle.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, you can catch Laverne and Shirley every weeknight at 8:30 Central on MeTV. The series is also out on DVD, and you can catch Cindy's book, Shirley Igest, A Storied Life, at Amazon.com, or check out your local bookseller. Cindy, what an inspirational story, and what a pleasure it has been hanging out with you tonight.
You too, Dave. Thank you so much.
And send my best to Ms. Marshall as well.
I will tell her that first thing in the morning.
Okay. All right. Good night, Cindy. Thanks again.
All right, Dave. Good night.
Good night.